How are you?
Huh? Hey.
This is
Frances Ashgon.
Right. I said, hi, Frances.
Oh, okay. You're cracking up, dear. Okay, I'm better. I'm good.
You want me to try to call back?
No, this is good now.
It's not cracking up at all?
No, not now.
Okay. What's going on? How's everything with you?
Everything's good. Mama just got out of the hospital yesterday, so she had to get the evaluation today. So they've come and gone, so they're good.
Okay.
So now her caretaker's here, so I'm good.
Okay. All right. Well, again, thank you for doing the interview with us today. Tell us a little bit about your time at ABC. Well, Frances, before we start, can you say and spell your full name?
Okay. Frances Ashgon. Frances, F-R-A-N-C-E-S, E for Elizabeth, and then A-S-H-E hyphen G-O-I-N-S.
Okay. And Frances, when were you there at Alan Benedict Court?
Wow. So when I was a little girl. I was trying to think of the age, and I can't remember. I just remember I was a little girl.
So are you from Columbia?
I'm from Columbia. I was born at Fort Jackson.
Okay.
Ray went to Carver Elementary, W.A. Perry, and C.A. Johnson in Carolina.
Okay. So when were you in first grade? I'm asking because my mother.
I know. Okay, so I'm 72. So I was in first grade. I was born in 48, so I was 6 years old. Of course, I was in kindergarten first. So 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54.
Okay.
54. I was 54. I was in Carver Elementary.
Okay.
And they
nice.
Call it Carver something else now.
Mhm. Yeah. What was it like then? Did you enjoy your elementary school days?
Yeah. My elementary school days were great. I walked from our house on Laurel Street, or I sometimes stayed with my grandmother. So I would walk from my grandmother lived at S4. So I walked from S4, which is on Laurel Street also, and walked through Alan Benedict Court and down Reed Street and then over another street that I can't remember to go to Carver. There were a lot of other kids walking then, so we had fun.
So I'm interested in your fond memories of Alan Benedict Court and some of the things that you remember. And you indicated you have some good memories, which is
Oh, yeah. So... Grandmama, our family moved to 2400 block of Laurel Street, a lot of times I would go down to Grandmama's house, and she was on Laurel Street, but in S4. And so sometimes I'd spend the weekends with her, and I remember she had a beautiful rose bush right in the backyard, and it had beautiful roses. I remember trying to grab one of the roses and a thorn cut me across my eye. I still had that scar, but I look at it fondly. And my grandma said she told me to leave her flowers alone. I remember it was just a one bedroom apartment, so she had a sleeper couch, so that's where I would sleep when I'd go over to visit her. And I remember helping her, and I remember her cooking. I remember the neighbors in that building. They were so kind. One of the lady next door, Miss Larry, she was keeping her granddaughter. So her granddaughter and I grew up together. And actually, with our 50th reunion for C.A. Johnson, I actually saw Melvina again, and I hadn't seen her for years. So we sat and talked about how much fun we have.
Yeah.
The other, The other thing I remember is that playground. They had a wonderful playground and swings and sliding boards, and it was a place to go and hang out and play with your friends and new friends and people. There were just, everybody was all friendly. They were all getting along together, and it was a peaceful, well, it's peaceful not for kids because we were yelling and screaming and running around, but it was, you know, things that you could do that you really can't do now because people are afraid. But we could walk anywhere. We would walk down to Reed Street because there was a little store down there. We could get candy. And then we walked down Laurel Street, and there was a store on the corner down there also. One of my other fond memories is when Benedict College had a homecoming. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was such an exciting time. Even if it wasn't at my grandmother's house, I would come down there because there was a tree. And we could climb in the tree and watch the game. But even before we watched the game, they had a parade, and the homecoming parade, and they would come right down Laurel Street and go into the stadium. So that as a kid was just fabulous. So when I grew up, I was saying, I'm going to Benedict. I didn't go to Benedict because I wanted to go in nursing, so I went to Carolina because that's where I had the nursing school. But a lot of my classmates did.
So one of the things that I hear a lot from people is, like, back in the 50s, for instance, well, let's start with Allen Benedict Court being built in 1940. And when it was built, it was a flagship. I mean, affordable housing was relatively new. And Allen Benedict Court was one of the first that was built in our country. And so from talking to my friends like Vince Ford and others who've lived there, moving into a community like Allen Benedict Court was considered moving up, you know, because the facilities were nice. There was the playground. There was a sense of community that was different than other community for African-American people at the time. Do you remember anything about that?
I was too young. I was too young to know about things like that.
To know if your friends lived better than you?
No, because I stayed in a house. But when I would go visit my grandmother, it was an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the only difference was whenever I visit my grandmother, they had a community room that you could go in there and play things, and there was a big playground that we had, and I didn't have that at the house.
I see.
Yeah, so that was the only difference. We moved from a shotgun house where you could see from one end to the other, and that was on Oak Street over to Laurel Street, which was a three-bedroom house.
Okay.
And so going to my grandmother's house was, like, great because I didn't see the difference, you know, because we were just kids. We were playing. I didn't know I was poor till I went to college, honestly, you know, because I didn't have poverty as a word in my vocabulary.
Yeah.
We were happy. We were eating well. We had fresh fruits and vegetables. We never wanted for anything. If we wanted something new, my mom made it, and it was beautiful. And my grandmother crocheted a lot. In fact, I learned how to crochet from her and knit. And so we weren't poor. That wasn't something in my vocabulary until I went to college. And that was a white college that I went to, and that's when I learned that I was maybe poor. Because I don't remember that.
What year did you go to the University of South Carolina?
I graduated in 66. I went there in 60s, in the fall of 66.
Wow. You were among the first, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was like, wow. Seeing stuff on TV with dogs and stuff. And the threat of dogs now, and knowing how that was back in the day when I was a trying to get an education and going to Carolina was like really rough.
Mm-hmm.
It was really rough because I was in segregated schools all my life, and I got a good education. I mean, I when I got to Carolina, I saw that I was behind, but I didn't know I was behind.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot of studies to get up, but I didn't have the sense of poverty or diminished intelligence or none of that. I experienced that when I went to Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so, the community of Alabama Court was like really, really strong, and I saw people that were leaders of the Black community. Come in there to community center, to the community center to have meetings with people and stuff. And I wouldn't go because I was a kid. You know, I'd stay outside and play.
Exactly. Coming and going.
Yeah, but I could see people, you know, coming and going, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't understand all of that at the time. I just understood that it was dangerous. It was a dangerous time in the 60s, and I need to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been taught that all my life anyway about white people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me about your family.
So I'm one of six kids. So I'm the oldest of the six kids. And so there's five girls and one boy. So we all just were very, very happy. We're still very happy. Mama taught us to always stick together. And so we always do. Even if we go away, I went away to D.C. for 37 years and I'm back home now after I retired because that was what I was going to do. And so now everybody's home. My other family members had traveled and gone other places, but they came back home.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all home now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other day when I was talking to you, you tell me you do different things. You were finishing up a webinar. And what kind of things interest you now?
The same stuff I worked on as a nurse and as a policy person. I was deputy director for the Office on Women's Health at HHS in D.C. That was my last career assignment. But before that, I worked at Howard University Hospital. Infection control nurse, so right when HIV/AIDS epidemic started. So I'm still working on HIV/AIDS as it impacts women. I'm working on domestic violence as it impacts families. In South Carolina, I had the distinction of being number one, so I still talk a lot about that. Lupus has impacted my family very seriously. My niece has died. My sister has it now and a couple other nieces. Organ tissue donation is very keen for me. My daughter has end-stage renal disease,
mm-hmm.
and she's been on dialysis for 32 years now. She's 46.
Oh, boy.
But when we moved back here, the healthcare system here was a little different. And the mm-hmm. services were a little different, but we navigated that. I mm-hmm. pushed and pulled and found out with, I guess, had knowing how things work in the health system since I was at the lead for it,
mm-hmm.
even at Women's Health, but with my connections with HHS and with HRSA and SAMHSA and NIH and all that, I kind of knew how things worked. So it was hard at first adjusting, but we adjusted and we're here now. And human trafficking is another issue. I worked on that when I was in D.C. So all the things that I worked on when I was in D.C., I found ways to do it here through mm-hmm. the Coalition of 100 Black Women, through Columbia Area Black Nurses Association, but also through affiliations with some of the organizations here that deal with HIV, deal with sickle cell with the health department. I have sickle cell trait, so does my son. So the things I did when I was getting paid are the mm-hmm. things that were from my heart. Mm-hmm. So I still work on them. I still work on them in various ways. So when COVID-19 came around, I'm spending most of my time writing writing articles for position statements with a team of people for either Black nurses or Kaita 5 nursing sorority. We did a webinar first webinar with the Columbia Area Black Coalition on COVID and mental health, and then we did one on COVID and health disparities, and that was really well received. And I've done some Facebook Live things with two representatives. So, yeah.
So did you do that webinar on with the Coalition of 100 Black Women Columbia for Health Disparities? And,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I arranged that. I was the chair of the health committee, so that's our second one.
Okay, well, I attended.
Yeah, I know. I saw you there. I saw your name.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. That was very informative, and I thought it would be great. It was really wonderful to see our community doing that for our community.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, really good.
That's one of the things we were, when we're going, COVID made us rethink how we're going to do things. So the webinars, that's the biggest thing now. So,
Well, we're all online, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
All right, we are all online. So, communities, community is really important.
Oh my God, yes.
Determining who we are.
Yeah. You know, the thing about working in D.C., which doesn't have representation, and then coming back home, I see what people are saying about politics is local. Because if we get the local people online and get local representatives that come to D.C. to change policy, that's where it's really at. I was national. I did national stuff, so I never did local stuff. Because I was there 37 years. It's over half of my life that I've been in D.C. area. So I didn't appreciate how important local stuff was, except what I did in D.C., because I did in D.C. with the coalition, with Black nurses. So I still did stuff in D.C. for D.C., but it's not like having a state. And this is a state. So with representatives, a whole lot of them, well, not a whole lot of them, but there are a whole lot of state representatives and, state senators. And that was different for me. So I'm enjoying being part of the political stuff because I couldn't do that as a federal employee except on my own time. So I'm truly happy to meet my representatives and see what they're about, and my senators from the state senators, and see what they're about. And it's been quite exciting. I've actually been to the state house for a couple of hearings and stuff and meetings, and it's been quite interesting because I'm like, well, gee whiz, these representatives don't have staff.
Mm-hmm.
So where are they getting their information from? And they're getting it from the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because their staff, they're sharing staff. They only work half a year. And I was used to Congress, where they have lots of staff. They have a congressional LA. They have a business LA. They have all these staff people.
Mm-hmm.
So to come back to a state where they don't have all of that, and where they get the information from. So I see how it's important to work in local politics, find out what your local reps are doing and make sure you get your issue in front of them.
Frances,
yes.
What was it like to go back to the University of South Carolina as an adjunct professor?
Well, so I was nominated and awarded Black Alumni of the Year.
Wow.
And that's why I came back. Because I've done a lot of stuff you know, nationwide, mm-hmm. and created a lot of programs that are still going on nationwide. So the College of Nursing submitted my resume, and I won as a Black Alumna of the Year, Alumna of the Year. So that's when I came back.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so. Then they asked me a lot about my experiences, but, you know, a lot of them with the College of Nursing, so, and the School of Public Health. So back in the day, there were issues, but I see where Carolina has come a long way. We had the Afro-American Association, you know, back in the day, and now they're totally integrated, but from what I understand, the racism is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So Pastides was the president at that time when I came back, so I got to know him and his wife very closely. And so that was good. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. So that's how it is coming back. As far, you know, as an adjunct professor, I have this title. I don't teach because that's working. So they call me in for meetings. I'm working on some stuff now with one of the professors around prostate cancer.
Okay.
And I've done other leadership seminars. I've come in and talked to students about leadership. I've talked about Congress and how bills are passed. And so I've done that like every now and then, but it's not like a everyday thing, because that'll be teaching, and I'm retired. They keep reminding people. They say, you're retired, but you're still doing all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, because that keeps me involved, keeps the brain functioning, and I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. This is such a fascinating look at ABC, talking to someone who didn't live there, but who had a dear person that did live there, and so they spent a lot of time there. You know, because it gives you an outsider's looking in kind of viewpoint. Tell me about your grandmother. What was her name?
Oh, her name was, my grandmama. Josephine Annie Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Josephine. My cousin is named for her, but she died. And my daughter, her middle name is Anne.
Oh, wow.
That's for my grandmother. Mm-hmm. She was a force. She grew up around, the area where A.P. Williams Funeral Home is over on that street over there. It's Carolina's taking it over. There are no houses over there now.
Mm.
But that's where she grew up.
That's Washington Street. Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere over in there.
Yeah.
The house's not there anymore. But I know it's it was like a block from A.T. Williams Funeral Home.
Okay.
Before she moved over to Alabama Court. Houses, huh?
So she moved from one of those older rundown houses over there.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I got it.
Yes.
So you said she made things. Your mother made things. Your grandmother made things.
Yeah, Mama sewed and Grandmama crocheted.
Oh, wow. What
kind of? And knitted.
So is that like sweaters or?
Yeah, sweaters and hats and blankets and stuff. And Mama made clothes. She made clothes for us girls. She made a suit for Steve one time, my brother. Steve Ash is my brother. He was a basketball star at Eau Claire High School.
Okay.
Yeah. I forgot when, because I was in Germany then when he was doing all of that. My husband was in the military, so he got transferred to Berlin, so I went there. And when Steve was in high school, when I came back, all I see is the pictures of him being his big basketball star.
Well, that must have been exciting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that must have been exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your travel. You mentioned that you were in Berlin at the time, that your brother was playing and doing all of that. He must be a younger brother.
He is. He's next to the baby.
So, graduating high school, what happened with you?
After I graduated from high school, I went to Carolina. I got my associate degree in nursing. I started working at Richland. I moved over to the other Richland, then I got my BSN and worked for AHEC in Florence, South Carolina, Area Health Education Center. Then I worked in Charleston at MUSC as a pediatric nurse educator. And then from there, I came back to Columbia, got my master's, and then my husband got transferred to Berlin. So we spent 3 years there. And then since his home of record is D.C., that's how I ended up in D.C.
Nice.
And I became the D.C., I think we're in Berlin from 80 to 83, and then we came to D.C. then in summer of 83.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked at Walter Reed, and then I worked at Howard Hospital, and then the university.
Mm-hmm.
It's HIV AIDS. And I got to travel a lot with I was with the Commission on AIDS. So we traveled around the state doing education for HIV/AIDS with healthcare providers.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was with the White House Office on AIDS and got to travel even more around the states. And then I went to the Office of HIV/AIDS Policy. And we went to all of the put-on programs across the world. And then I went to Office of Women's Health and even got to travel even more to promote education for women and their families because women and their families seem to be left out. So the National Women and Girls HIV AIDS Awareness Day on March 10th, we started that. I started that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so just one of the things. My last trip, I'll say this, was to Beijing, China. That was because of my work with the Department of Justice and Vice President Biden had a delegation, a White House delegation to go there to talk about domestic violence and our work in the state. So I was a part of that delegation, even though it was funny, I was retiring in August. But that was in June, but they still wanted me to go. I was like, cool. I was just talking to some friends last night. We went to, we were talking about our trip to the World AIDS convention that's worldwide. And we were in South America together at Durban. And we were talking about how excited we were that it wasn't my first trip to Africa, but it was my first trip to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
About how it wasn't like we thought. There were actually streets, and it looked like New York on a river, on a big ocean. It was like really nice. So anyway, so I've traveled around. Yeah,
you're a very interesting person, and I'd love to know more about you beyond this interview that we're doing. So. Hopefully, I'll Google you and all that stuff.
I'm Google Malomo.
So, what year were you the University of South Carolina's Alumna of the Year, Black Alumna of the Year?
Oh God, I don't remember.
What you say? You say?
Wait a minute, I got an award somewhere. Where is
well,
it?
You said Harry Pestides was the president.
President, then yeah. Yeah. So here it is. Here's the award. Let's see what year on this thing. Oh, it don't have a year.
So, but I'm just gonna Google it anyway.
Google it. You'll see it. I put it in my resume and stuff.
And I would like you to forward me a copy of that, just so I can have that.
Okay. Sure. Sure. You sent me an email, right?
I'm not gonna try to make you work, but you sure could. Be an expert or there's so many different roles, community roles. We could really benefit from your expertise and your experience in so many ways in South Carolina. And so, I know
that's what Jim Clyburn tells me.
when I was in D.C. and I go visit him. He said, when you coming back home? So when I came back home, I told him. I said, I'm back home. He said, good. Now go to work.
Well, our executive director will be very excited to meet you as well.
Okay.
You know, and thank you for answering when we put that out there about wanting to capture some really wonderful stories about ABC. From here and from, and I'll give you an opportunity in a minute just to say any closing thing. But
okay.
From here, so I'm interviewing maybe 15 or 20 people, and you're the first.
Oh, okay,
so,
cool.
Mm-hmm. And so from here along the way, what I want to do is put together some other ways to capture it in video.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll talk about that and how to do
okay.
that. The
okay.
Demolition will be going on for, you know, quite a while.
Okay.
And so the Alan Benedict Court Forever in My Heart campaign will likely go on from 9 to 12 months.
Okay.
Where we do several different things. But I'm really looking forward to being able to do this oral history piece, to be able to put some of the sentiment on our website, as well as some of the other things that we're doing and that we will use as part of our media campaign.
Okay.
And your being willing to be a part of that is wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
See,
definitely.
You walking from your house down to your grandmother's house and
mm-hmm.
feeling like you truly were being raised by a village.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. There was nothing that you could do if somebody saw they didn't go and tell you. You were doing anything wrong.
Did you feel like Alan Benedict Court was a big part of your village?
Oh, yes. Definitely. Definitely, because see, there were more people there than at my house, you know, and then I had a college in between with the college people, so it was great to go from my single house to walk through the college place, because, you know, if you walk down from 2400 block of Laurel Street and walk down toward Benedict, then all those areas were Benedict people and Benedict things, even more, it's more so now than it was then, but the professors lived there. The students had housing there. So before you got to Alan Benedict Court.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The history is so rich. So I hope that we'll be able to do it justice. Any last thing that you'd like to mention?
Yeah. There was so much togetherness. There was so much people to look up to and leadership and so much respect. I wish we could get that back. But the respect within our own Black community, I think, is much needed. I think that I've done a lot of meetings with groups from childhood on up, and I think that respect is taught. And it was taught to us. You respected your elders. You didn't, you know. And elders weren't friends. You know what I mean?
Right.
Your mama said, I'm not your friend. I'm your mama. That kind of stuff. So I think we need to, like, get back to that respect and our roles to raise up our children to be respectful of not authority, but be respectful of the elders within the Black community. And I think that goes a long way, because if you respect them, you'll listen to them and you'll hear what they say and you'll learn from history. History doesn't have to repeat itself like it's doing now. Granted, there's a good reason for it, but it still doesn't have to repeat itself like that. There are ways. I went to the protest last Saturday, and I was just so gratified, so amazed to see all the young people there and what they were standing up for and voicing their opinions. And that was something I couldn't do when I was young. We weren't allowed to. We were scared to. They have the freedom now to do that, and they have the social media as a place, as a thing that they can use to communicate a lot faster than we could by calling up everybody,
mm-hmm.
But use it for good so that there's some positive things that come out of this time that we're going through right now.
Well, Francis, this has been wonderful. I've really enjoyed it. If I'm going to text to you my email address.
Okay, please, and, so I can send it to you.
I want you to send that to me there. And do you have any questions of me?
No, just let me know what else you need. Text me, call me. I'll be around.
Okay. And if I need a volunteer who might want to help with chronicling some of the beautiful memories I get, is that something that you might be interested in helping with?
As long as I don't have to do any spreadsheets or any of that stuff, because I'm not that good at computers. My 11-year-old granddaughter helps me a lot. And besides that, when I was working, I had staff. I didn't have to learn it. I have to learn it now.
Well, that's the deal. I won't ask you to do any of that stuff. But
okay.
You're just such a treasure. And okay. I just want to show you off.
All right. Yes, I can do that, but not, you know, people send me stuff in PDFs, and then my computer's trying to change it. The phone changes it better than the computer does, the DX people. I'm like, wait a minute. I got to look at it on my little phone because I can't see it on my old laptop. I guess I need to get a newer one, but I can't buy one because there aren't any more because everybody bought them all out. I got to wait till they bring some more in.
Well, all right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this, and we will be back in touch.
And I appreciate you reaching out to me. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.